National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project 2. This is Eleanor Cohen and Harold Kimball interviewing Mr. Albert Bloom on May 3, 1984, at his home. Mr. Bloom, we'd like to begin by asking you your name and address.
Yes. My name is Albert W. Bloom. I'm the Executive Editor Emeritus of the Jewish Chronicle of Pittsburgh. I live at 3242 Beechwood Boulevard, and my phone number is 421-2724, Pittsburgh, PA.
First, we'd like to talk about your immediate family. Will you tell us about your father and then mother and any siblings you might have?
Yes, my father was Aaron Bloom, and he came originally from Germany in the late 90s. My mother was Rose Rachel Bloom, and she came in about the same time in the late 90s from what was then Russia. They raised nine children in this area after having settled first in Philadelphia, and I am the baby of nine.
May I have your birth date?
My birth date is August 9th, 1918.
Thank you. Are any of your sisters and brothers living today and living in this area?
Yes, we have three sisters in this area. My sister Bess, Ella, and Bee, and my brother Morris, Maury, is at the Veterans Hospital out in Aspinwall. My brother Dr. Joseph Bloom is a retired internist and psychiatrist, and he is living here. And my brother, Dr. Max Bloom, who was head of the chest surgery service at the VA hospital in California, is now retired.
And where were you born?
We have lost two members of our family, my sister Shirley, who died in California, and my sister George, my brother George, who died in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And where were you born? Here in Pittsburgh?
I was born here in Pittsburgh on 1935 Webster Avenue in the Hill District.
And what was your family doing there? What did your father do when he came to Pittsburgh?
My father was a seller of produce, both to individuals and to stores. And he started with a horse and wagon and graduated to a truck. And I always remember when we had a horse and wagon in the stable, the horse was on the second floor. It was very interesting to see a horse looking out of the second floor of a stable down on the Hill District.
Was there a ramp?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, there was a ramp. But this horse was not trained to walk steps.
Good. Can you tell us something about your home atmosphere? Was it a religious home?
Well, I was raised in a religious home, very Jewish, very loving, very warm. And my mother was a great inspiration to the whole family and really was the great motivator of all the children in the usual pursuits of Jewish mothers, and that is health and education, probably in that order.
Good. And when did she die?
My mother died, I believe, in 1941, when I was away at school at Columbia, and she died of cancer, and it was a great blow to me because I was her baby, the baby of nine, and very devoted to her, and she to me. And it's very interesting that you would ask that, because today is her yard site, and I just came from Shoal, davening in her memory at the Bima. She filled every word of the prayer.
And she's living on, of course, in your heart. Well, you know that.
She will always live in my heart. She's been an inspiration, as all dear Jewish mothers are.
How old was she when she died?
She was in her deep 60s.
And your father?
My father died about 11 years later. And we had moved from Oakland then to Squirrel Hill. And he was a bright gem with a sharp tongue, very learned, and very bright, and had a great wit, and was a sharp thinker.
Can you tell us something about the economic life, facts of your life in those days?
Well, we grew up as a Depression family, and my dear and beautiful mother held that family together, and how she found funds to feed 11 mouths in the Deep Depression, I will never understand, and still pay all the bills. At that time, we had what they called a closed mortgage. We had a mortgage on our house that we could never pay off. That we were at the mercy of the mortgager, a man by the name of Harcha, as I recall. And each time it came time to renew the mortgage, there was tension. At least I felt the tension. Maybe nobody else did. But because we never knew whether he was going to renew the mortgage for us and let us stay in the house. That reflected my attitude on owning my own house when and if I could. And I did it. At any rate, we never wanted for good fruit and vegetables, because my father dealt in that. And he always made sure that our table was and our larder was well stocked. And my mother was a very keen and economic shopper, and a marvel at preparing all kinds of new and different foods. And we had relatively a formal dinner every night. She waited until all the family came, and then we pulled the table. We had a large table, 11 people, pulled the table out from the wall, spread it out. She always set the table in full, and we had a full course dinner, no matter how difficult were the circumstances in that depression, and they were difficult, as you can imagine, because the children were growing up, they were being educated, sent away to school. The boys got first crack at it, because that was the custom, that the boys should be educated first, because they needed to eventually support families. And the girls were very self-sacrificing, even though I guess my sister B had the sharpest mind in the family, but never had a chance to further her education until she was deep in her working years.
Thank you. And as far as the disciplines of the house,
The house was a discipline house, firm and loose. In other words, nobody was lectured. I think we got educated in our Jewish sensitivities and Jewish moralities by example, particularly my mother's example, who was a great and wonderful and brilliant person who never had a chance at education, but whose mathematical mind was keener than any of our college-educated minds in the family. She was enormously bright, and knew the prayers off by heart. As a matter of fact, at Pesach, at the Passover Seder, very often my dad, seeing the children were restless, would speed along and sometimes skip a paragraph. A paragraph in the Haggadah at Pesach, at Passover, my mother would always stop him and repeat for him to remind him he left out paragraph X, Y, and remind him to go over it, and always off by heart.
As far as the cultural life in your family, in addition to the Jewish religion and the Jewish emphasis, was there anything else was done? Were there any concerts or?
Well, we were one of the first people in the neighborhood to have a gramophone for classical records. No matter how impoverished we might have been, education was never neglected. You can take a look at this house, and you can see it's overloaded with books. Each child had his own library, and
yes.
Books filled the house, and conversation was always uplifting, jovial, and with a strong sense of moral education as well.
Can you tell us about your school days? Where you went to school, first of all, what your subjects, your favorite subjects were, and then if there were any teachers in particular that had an influence on you?
Yes, I went to home school for my elementary education.
Where was that?
That's in Oakland. and Shenley High School for my high school education, Duquesne University for my undergraduate education, and Columbia University in New York for my graduate education at the Pulitzer Graduate School of Education.
When did you graduate from Shenley High School? Do you remember?
A long time ago.
All right.
I might say, since you asked for inspirational teachers, there was one professor who once said to me, said to us, he's a French professor, said, if you can count the teachers who have influenced you on the fingers of one hand, you're very lucky. I had a lot of inspirational teachers, but one was superb, and her name was Loretta Petronella Byrne.
Where was she a teacher?
She was a teacher at Shenley High School, a devout Catholic, and an inspirational teacher who knew more about medieval literature than any college professor I ever had. She was a great poet and a lovely, feeling person, became a great friend of the family's, a great friend of my mother's, and was a great help to me. It was she who interceded with the Bishop of Pittsburgh at that time. And so far as we knew, I was the first Jewish boy from Pittsburgh who went to Columbia University, Pulitzer Graduate School of Journalism, with a recommendation from the Catholic bishop, and helped in scholarships and the like. She was an enormous influence in my life, and I pay her homage this minute. She's a great poet. She wrote much better poetry than I ever did.
Now, you went then from Shenley High School to the University of Pittsburgh.
I went from Shenley High School to Duquesne University.
Duquesne, yes.
And it's very interesting that you would mention that,
yes,
because just now, just about a year ago, Duquesne University each year now has a century club in which it inducts some 10 or 12 of graduates whose professional work has rendered credit and honor upon the alma mater. And I was just inducted into the century club at Duquesne University recently, about a year or so ago. If you're interested in an incident thereby, I might like to mention it to you. Are you?
Yes, I am.
When I was told I was nominated, I was very flattered, of course. The Century Club started with a century-old age of the university, and then the honored graduates were invited. It was before Sukkot, the holiday of Sukkot, the holiday of Tabernacles. I was called, Father Joseph Lucy, who was also a student of Loretta Byrne, and who is now a venerable priest, did the nomination, and was very interested that I accepted. It happened to come out on a day that was the first induction of Sukkot, you know, the night before. All Jewish holidays, as you know, are inducted the night before, because since creation, the night belongs to the day. I told them I couldn't come because it was Sukkot. And it was a holiday because, there was a matter of the kosher food, and I don't like to be the cynosure of attention. We keep kosher and try to adhere as best we can. So I was a little uncomfortable. I don't like to make a fuss or a scene. So I explained, A, it was a holiday, B, there was a matter of kosher food. So Father Lucy called back to the president of the university. Father Lucy called me back and said, if we arranged for you to have kosher food at the Duquesne Club downtown, and if we would arrange for you to stay overnight at a downtown hotel, would you come? Talked it over with my wife, Evelyn, and we decided that if that could be arranged without fuss or fanfare, we would. So, we were driven down before the holiday started to the Beis HaMedrash HaGadol Beis Yaakov Shul, which is the Arena Synagogue downtown.
Yes.
We davened at that synagogue. We went into their sukkah, and we benched esrog and lulav, which is the ceremonies of the harvest season. And we and we said the Kiddush, and we walked downtown to the Duke King Club. As you know, they were building the subway then. It was kind of difficult. We walked all over the ports. We went to the Duke King Club. There was kosher food for us. The induction took place, and as you can imagine, there were many eminent clerics there from the Catholic Church, from the Holy Ghost Order, which runs Duquesne University, and from the bishop. You know, there's a difference between ordered priests and secular priests in the Catholic religion, which has always intrigued me, as well as scholastic philosophy of the Catholic Church. At any rate, there were many different kinds of presentations and speeches of many kinds, and I must say that whether coincidence or not, at no time was the name of the founder of the Christian religion mentioned during those speeches. Whether that was a particular kind of ecclesiastical courtesy in my direction, affirming our joint belief in one God, master of the universe, I can't say whether that was a studied reason or not. The only thing I can say to you is I report it as a fact. Among all those clerics, including the bishop and the president of the university, not once was the individual founder's name mentioned, although the recognition of one God, king of the universe, was mentioned in such context.
Seems quite extraordinary.
Extraordinary to me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't inquire, but it increased my respect enormously, because nobody had to give way on his religious principles there, neither the clerics nor the guests, the various guests of honor. After the event was over, we walked down to the Hilton, where rooms had been arranged for us, and since we weren't carrying on Yontif, we walked in, and we told the clerk we can't sign. He said, "Don't worry, I know all about it." We went up to our room and walked out the next morning, thanked them for their courtesies, and we walked from downtown all the way out to our own shul in Squirrel Hill, the Young People's Synagogue, Bone Israel, for services. It was very interesting, because people who knew us and knew the event was taking place evidently were on the streets or in buildings, because we got reports people were watching us walk from downtown to Squirrel Hill, and we were spotted along the road. So
that's a very interesting anecdote.
So that increased my respect, if it had to be increased, for the thoughtfulness and the courtesy of Duquesne Catholic University in its ecumenical concerns for a Jewish former student and a former faculty member, because I had taught there for some years.
How did you happen to go to Duquesne University in the first place?
Loretta Byrne, who was my inspirational teacher that I told you about, Loretta B. Byrne, thought that I would enjoy going to the Catholic school, and the education was fine and precise and very intensive. Education was a very strong aspect, and also, she helped arrange for a scholarship for me to go. And it behooves you to know at this point that one of the scholarships that I carried was from the National Council of Jewish Women.
I'm very happy about that.
Arranged by a Catholic teacher through Mrs. Alexander Silverman, who was a stalwart of council.
Yes.
Besides, it was cheaper at Duquesne.
Oh, that's another pertinent.
And we couldn't afford a great.
And being Jewish and being at Duquesne, how did that affect you? Were there many other Jewish students at the time?
There were a few. There were some. There was a Jewish fraternity there, which I couldn't afford to join. So I was twice isolated. Nevertheless, at no time I made to feel an outsider. Contrary-wise, it was just the opposite.
At that point, if I can interject, I knew some basketball stars. Were you aware, or where was basketball a big...
The biggest.
And weren't there a lot of Jews on the team? Jewish
I
wouldn't
boys? Say many, but there were a significant number.
That's what I mean.
Marty Ryder, Eric
exactly.
Brenner,
yes.
That sort of thing.
Okay.
But I did want to mention to you, I was the managing editor of the Duquesne Duke, mm-hmm. the newspaper. As you might be familiar with the term retreats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Retreat is really an ecclesiastical term, even though we use it in all groups now, but it's really an ecclesiastical, I wouldn't say ecclesiastical, but a religious term, a withdrawal from ordinary activity and thinking mm-hmm. through issues or problems. We use it all the time now. But on all the holidays and during all the retreats at the university, naturally there were comments and editorial statements about these events. Naturally they were very serious religious events mm-hmm. dealing with holidays, studies, philosophies, attitudes, ethics, etc. within the scholastic philosophical fold and the Catholic studies. It happens that the Jewish managing editor always did the editorials at that time on the Catholic retreats. None of the other kids would touch it. Why? Because if they made an error, they would really get called down. But if the Jewish managing editor made an error, well, you couldn't
hold him.
For that. You couldn't hold him responsible. However, I made it my business that there was never an error. This training and background helped marvelously. Actually, it really strengthened and reinforced my own Jewish education, because it showed me how much devotion there could be in the daughter religion, and therefore intensified my concern to reinforce my own Jewish concerns for community and my own individual attitude.
You were a journalism major, excuse me. You were a journalism major at that time? You were not.
I was not. There was no journalism school at Duquesne at that time. There is now. I majored in political science and got my preliminary Tyro training on the Duquesne Duke, as I indicated you, working up from reporter to managing editor. Now, I suppose it might be that there was only a unspoken rule that the editor-in-chief would be Catholic. I can't say that. All I know is I ran the paper as a managing editor and was accorded all courtesies and honors attached thereto. That background and training, by the way, Loretta Byrne, my inspirational teacher at Duquesne at Shenley High School, eventually after I graduated became a dean of women at Duquesne. So while I was teaching there, I continued that relationship on a mature basis. At any rate, that background came in handy many times. For instance, I was honored by the Catholic Press Association, the CPA, to be the judge of many of their scholastic contests for diocesan newspapers and dioceses across the country. And you had a point of recommending what things might be done to improve it. And I think I was the first person, as I recall, that I know of, that was able to recommend to the Catholic Press Association that when color came into use for newspapers some years ago, that it might be well for the Catholic newspapers to use the liturgical colors of the year in using the colors on the newspaper, so that it would be a means of Catholic education to familiarize their own parishioners with the changes of the liturgical colors during the liturgical year in the Catholic Church. And that was well received. Nobody had ever done that before, and it was the background afforded to me by the atmosphere of Duquesne University that stimulated that return for benefits received intellectually.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And then you went on from Duquesne University to Columbia University.
Yes.
And also, what did you study there?
Also through the help and inspiration of my teacher, Loretta Byrne, Loretta B. Byrne, I was given a scholarship to the Pulitzer School of Journalism, the Pulitzer Graduate School of Journalism at Columbia, and made it possible for me to go, which I wouldn't otherwise be able to do. And I had a meal job at Columbia, but when I went to report, the meals were such that I couldn't eat them; they were non-kosher. And one of the ladies who ran that kind of a program at one of the places where I was a slave to go, and I said, "Well, I won't be eating the meat or anything like that. Maybe the raw vegetable." So that person, whose name I've happily forgotten, asked me why, and I told her that I could not eat kosher meat. For some reason or other, she then said the job is not open any longer. It was a lesson in the real world to me. It didn't stop me, but it gave me pause. And I realized that when one is out in the world, if you don't want to compromise, you have to be pretty steadfast.
So it gave you incentive, perhaps.
That's right. And instead of demoralizing me out in the real world, far away from home, far away from the shelter of my own family and friends in the big bad city, Baghdad, I'm not in New York, it made me realize that if you want to do what you have to do, you have to be pretty steadfast.
And your interests were then into journalism at this by this time.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, they were at interest from the time that Miss Byrne collared me in her class. She taught me English. As I said, she was a better professor than any college professor I ever had. And it was she who stimulated me. And it was under her aegis that I became editor-in-chief of the Shenley Triangle at Shenley High School.
And how long were you at Columbia University?
That was a one-year program.
Did you get a degree?
I got my master's at Columbia.
In journalism?
Master's in... It was a Master of Science.
I see.
Master of Science in the field of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you what it is to be under the guidance of the inspirational professors at Columbia, a school like Columbia, which I still think is the greatest school of journalism in the country, the Pulitzer School, and learned a great deal because we had both academic types and people from the top universities, the top newspapers in the country, the top newspapers of New York, which are at the top of the country. Bob Gosch and Ted Bernstein of the New York Times were two of my most prominent professors, and there was a Pulitzer Prize editor from Richmond, Virginia, Douglas Sydall Freeman, who wrote the famous Pulitzer Prize series on Robert E. Lee, and became a legend in Richmond because every time he went to work, he rode past the Lee statue and saluted formally. And he was a very bright fellow. But Bob Garst and Ted Bernstein on the New York Times staff were really leaders in their field, and they were great professors to me. And I learned a lot from them and use it to this day.
Very good. Let's go back just a little bit. In your growing up and in your college years, and so were there any health problems with either you or any member of your family that would pertain?
Well, as I told you, my mother died of cancer. A very shocking thing to me. Mm-hmm. I'm very deeply devoted to my mother.
And as far as you are concerned, your own health has never been a problem, or was not in those days?
Not that I know of.
Good.
If so, I was too foolish to know about it.
Can you tell us?
I had the usual allergies and usual childhood diseases.
Can you tell us briefly what you did for fun and recreation during your high school and or college days?
You asked me about health problems.
Yes, first. I did. Fine. Good.
The only health problem that would bother me is I was never tall enough as I would like to be. And although that passed through the years, it hurt me deeply.
Oh, you want to stop now?